Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today, I wanted to talk about a topic I've actually talked about, I think, on previous episodes in different ways, which is how I built up my exercise capacity and specifically my exercise capacity to go back to the gym and resistance train, because this was a question that someone recently asked me on Instagram in the Instagram Q&A that I do. And although I do believe I've spoken a little bit about my process in the past, I think it's always helpful to do updates. The way that I explain things now and the way that I view things now are different to how I was seeing things and explaining things almost 4 years ago when I started recording this podcast. And also, there've been further developments in my journey, which have facilitated my understanding, and also things that I've seen with clients and patterns that I've observed with clients, which have added to my knowledge base. So even though I have touched on this topic before, I think it would be good to revisit the topic. There's so much to say as well. I've been writing some notes in preparation for this episode, and there's so much I want to share with you. So even if you are just thinking about very, very baby steps in terms of getting some movement back into your life, please still listen to this episode. There might be valuable things that will be useful to you. If you are at the stage where you'd like to do resistance training or you would like to get back to the gym, then maybe you want to listen to this as well. As always, I love it if people can leave reviews for the podcast. I watch the numbers on Spotify and iTunes and see them creeping up every week when a new episode comes out. And I wanted to just say I really appreciate the time that it takes you to do that and the time that it takes you. Maybe if you share this episode with someone else or with your fatigue recovery or chronic illness recovery community, it just means that more people find the podcast and they are then able to get some of the help and support that they need. I get such wonderful messages about how much the podcast is helping people. So I'm so grateful for those. And I'm so grateful that this body of work that I've created has been supportive for the community in some way. So if you do have a moment and you haven't left a review or a rating on iTunes or Spotify, please just take a moment to do that now. And then we will go into the episode. So where to begin? I thought I would just start off by painting a picture of how things were before I became unwell from a movement perspective. So I, since a very young age, since I was a teenager, I'd probably almost been a little bit obsessive with exercise. I would constantly be doing something, whether that was aerobics classes or swimming or going to the gym or running or something, probably to my detriment. I was very much guilty of over-exercising, under-fueling, and that is a great formula for increasing inflammation in the body. So not always the healthiest relationship with exercise, although I do think that that smoothed out as I got older. And I was very much into the gym, and I was very much into water sports, and I was very much into being outdoors and hiking and running on the beach and all of these wonderful things and doing yoga. And I was just an active person. A lot of my life was centered around movement. And the very early warning signs for me that I did have some sort of thing, shall we call it, happening in my body was when I would go to the gym and then I would come home. And I guess what I was experiencing was post-exertional malaise. I didn't know that it was post-exertional malaise at the time, but I would start to get brain fog and I would start to feel very low in motivation, which really isn't like me. I'm a very self-motivated, self-disciplined person. So to feel like I just wanted to lounge around on the sofa and not be able to concentrate from a cognitive perspective, that was very unusual for me. And that whole kind of exercise post-exertional malaise just waxed and waned over time. Sometimes it was better, sometimes it was worse, but eventually it got to a point where I just couldn't continue to do what I always used to do without getting this debilitating malaise that would just have me not be able to do anything for days at a time. So that post-exertional malaise was one of my key symptoms. Actually, when I didn't exercise that much, I would always feel a lot better. And then when I tried to get back into exercise, I would feel a lot worse. And this is something that I grappled with so relentlessly in the beginning of my journey, because I just wanted my life back. I just wanted to be able to do all the things that I love to do and enjoy it. And so I was constantly trying to find ways to do that. And I would try this and then it wouldn't work out. And then I would crash, and then I would try that and it wouldn't work out, and I would crash. And as time went on, things became worse and worse, I guess, because I was almost probably building up a memory set within my nervous system that exercise wasn't safe. And this is something I'll talk about in a moment, but I was building up this sort of an overcoupling between exercise and fear, because every single time I would do something, there would always be that hypervigilance in my nervous system where I would be thinking, is it going to happen? Am I going to crash? Am I going to get the brain fog? What's going to happen next? And then every time I did do something and I did have a reaction, it was almost like, you see, this is what happens when you exercise. And then, you know, those experiences repeated again and again and again were having a negative imprint on my system. Then when I was at my worst, I was able to walk sometimes more or less. I mean, some days I wouldn't want to walk at all. I could do activities of daily living around the house. So I could shower and I could cook. I didn't really do that much cleaning. I remember one time trying to clean the shower and crashing afterwards. I'm sure we've all had that experience. But I think I had enough resilience in my system that I wasn't completely debilitated. But, you know, walking would sometimes cause the brain fog and the post-exertional malaise. But it was something I was able to do. I was able to get around and maybe go for 20-minute walks or something like that. So in my recovery, I guess, like my starting point in terms of rebuilding my exercise capacity started with just being able to build up my walking endurance, being able to walk for longer and being able to walk faster without having any crashes or post-exertional malaise. I also used yin yoga as a tool to help support my nervous system, to help me with my recovery after I'd maybe done something more physical. And I also used cold water. And living here on the South Coast, I can walk down to the beach from where I am. When I was at a point in my recovery, I didn't actually walk down to the beach because I couldn't get back up the hill, but I would drive to or another beach where I could access the beach without having to walk very far. And then I would plunge in the cold ocean. And that was also something that was really supportive for me as well. And also, as time went on, I was able to build up some swimming, which I'll come to in a moment. So that kind of paints the picture of before and then the lowest point and then my starting point as I was starting to build up my exercise capacity. And I would say for anyone, no matter where you are right now, if you're wanting to build up your exercise capacity, there's probably three things that I would say are the most important things that you need or we want to consider. The first thing is that we want to find some sort of baseline so we're not overexerting ourselves. We need to work out what our capacity is and how to stay within that capacity. And that comes through establishing a routine. Some of my clients are really great. They love routine. They have a lot of structure in their life. And so it's very easy for them to like establish a routine, because we also have to factor in cognitive challenge, physical challenge, which might relate to activities of daily living, and emotional challenges as well. So having a structure and a routine allows us to be systemized in our approach. And then we can really start to understand what's too much for our body. And it's really important in the beginning, we're looking for stability. So we're trying to find the structure. We're trying to find this routine where we just do the same thing all the time before we try to expand. One of the things that I never did was I never was just consistent on one level. As soon as I had a little bit of energy, then I would suddenly start trying to do more and expand too quickly. And then inevitably I would crash. So the very, very first piece of advice I would give you is find your structure, find your routine, and do it consistently for a period of time before you add in anything new or before you expand too much. Inevitably, life is going to throw challenges at you anyway, so you're going to probably have to expand in response to life. So don't necessarily worry about the fact that you're going to be deconditioning or anything like that. Life will help you expand. Trust me on that. Then the second thing that you want to consider is when we exercise, we create more inflammation and oxidative stress in the body. So in a healthy person, they go for a run, they go to the gym, they lift some weights, they create some tissue damage, they create a little bit of oxidative stress, a little bit of inflammation in the body. But the body has the resourcefulness and resilience to recover, positively adapt to that inflammation and oxidative stress. And that's actually how we build fitness. That's how we build more mitochondria, or create more dense mitochondria. It's also how we grow muscle tissue. It's how we build our strength. It's how we build our cardiovascular capacity. So it's through the stress of exercise and the biochemical changes that happen in our body in response to exercise, that we build resilience, capacity, grow stronger, and we can do more. The challenge in chronic fatigue is that when people exercise, their body becomes so overwhelmed by the inflammation and oxidative stress that there isn't that positive strengthening, resilience building adaptation. There's actually a deconditioning which happens because the inflammation and oxidative stress is too much. It overwhelms the system. So one of the ways that we can reduce that inflammation and oxidative stress is by staying within our baseline, staying within our capacity, not doing more than what we should do. But we also need to think about physiologically, how do we reduce the oxidative stress and inflammation in the body? And this is where looking at the gut, looking at mold, looking at nutrient deficiencies, looking at the health of the cells, looking at toxic load, looking at stabilizing mast cells. This is where all that physiological stuff, shall we call it, comes into play. And as we reduce the inflammation and oxidative stress that's coming from the physiological load of imbalances in the body, then the body has more of an opportunity to positively adapt to exercise. So we need to make sure that these things are taken care of. Then the third thing that comes up a lot in my Nurturing Resilience membership, especially in the nervous system course, is what I refer to as coupling dynamics. Now, coupling dynamics, I touched on this very briefly when I did the introduction, is when we have two things which are stuck together. And in this case, we've got exercise and we've got fear. And basically what happens is the nervous system has started to associate exercise with fear, or there's an over association of exercise with fear. So as you start to exercise and your heart rate starts to increase and you start to feel a little bit hot and sweaty in your body and the breathing starts to get a little bit more difficult, alarm bells go off in your nervous system, and then the body goes into a fear response. And in some cases, this can cause heightened sympathetic activation or even a freeze response where there's more of a shutdown, more of a stuckness and numbness. There can be brain fog, there can be lethargy. And so in many cases, what we have to do, or the third thing we have to do when it comes to supporting the body to exercise, is we have to uncouple those two associations. So we have to uncouple exercise and fear. And this is something I can't teach you how to do on this podcast, but it is something that we cover in the Nurturing Resilience membership, and you're obviously very welcome to join that. So obviously, in my own journey, I didn't know any of these things. I was shooting in the dark, trying to work it all out for myself. And these are things now that I understand in hindsight, and I have the wonderful opportunity to teach and share with you, the listener. So In my own journey, however, I can see in hindsight how I was doing these things, although they weren't intentional. I wasn't thinking, right, I need to reduce the inflammation, oxidative stress by staying within my capacity. I didn't have that understanding at the time. I didn't even know, for example, that I had mold and mycotoxins in my body. So I didn't know that that was something that I needed to address to reduce the inflammation. And I didn't know what a coupling dynamic was. And I didn't know if my response to exercise was overcoupled with fear. I didn't know any of these things. And so I was just muddling my way through at the time and somehow eventually found some sort of level of success. But while I was on my journey, I started doing more training in, I did a course called Trauma and Somatics to become a trauma-informed professional. And then that was the gateway for me then to do my full training in somatic experiencing. So I was gathering these tools along the way. I did brain retraining. So I did the DNRS program with Annie Hopper. I always say that was the one thing that really helped my gut, but I don't really know how much it really helped with exercise, although it did perhaps in some ways shift the coupling dynamics. A lot of the visualizations I did as part of the training were all around movement. They were me swimming in the sea, running on the beach, going surfing. So I was visualizing me doing all these physical activities that I wanted to be able to do. And I was tracking for positive sensations in the body. So yeah, whether that was, I can't say for sure because it wasn't conscious or intentional at the time, but I think that's potentially something that could have been helpful for the coupling dynamics, because even though it was in my imagination and not in real life, I was building up positive associations with exercise instead of fearful associations with exercise. At the same time I was doing all of this, I started working with Zoe from Actively Autoimmune. I have interviewed her on the podcast. She's got a book about, I can't remember the title, but it's about how to exercise if you have an autoimmune condition and conditions like chronic fatigue. It's a really good book. I've read it. I'd recommend you read it if you haven't. And Zoe and I worked together and she introduced me to the concept of heart rate controlled walking. So I had a heart rate monitor and wasn't really using it, but she gave me guidance. She said, okay, you can walk. And when you walk, make sure your heart rate is under a certain amount of beats per minute, and just, you know, stay in that range. And so it was very interesting because some days it was easier to stay in that range than others. And, you know, this is where the nervous system comes in, potentially increasing our heart rate disproportionately. But it felt like I had a safety net because she had said, keep your heart rate in this particular zone. I knew, okay, that's safe. Zoe says that's safe. So it's safe for me to walk as long as my heart rate's in this zone. And then if I was walking and then I would notice after a period of time, my heart rate would go up as I walked for longer. Then if I was walking on the beach, I would just sit down on a rock and then I would use my somatic tools to settle my system and tell myself I was safe and just really, like, again, create those positive associations with exercise. Look at the beautiful scenery, feel the sunshine on my face, and just really appreciate the moment instead of couple that moment with fear. That was probably the one thing that worked really well for me when I was working with Zoe, is just building up my walking. And I would initially, I started just on completely flat walking. And I remember walking so slowly. There was one day, these two 80-year-olds walk past me and they were like, you're walking very slowly. And I was like, yes, I am. And, you know, obviously there was nothing I could do. That was just the speed at which I had to walk. So that was a real successful outcome. And from that point onwards, I think through the heart rate controlled walking, building up my confidence, using the somatic tools and the brain retraining tools to tell myself that I was safe to do this, I was able to build up how much I could walk. And I think by the end of that year, I think I'd started with Zoe in the January or February. And by the end of that year, I went on a 3-hour hike with hills, not like a lot of hills, but a few hills. Most of it was flat and some downhill. And that was a really, really good achievement. But the whole time in between, I was trying to add in resistance training. And I must say, I tried and failed more times than I succeeded. I tried all the things, like little pieces of resistance training at home. I tried to do some Pilates. I tried to do some gentle yoga. Zoe at one point had written a program for me. And again and again and again, it would just give me the post-exertional malaise, the brain fog, headaches, these types of things. And it was a constant source of frustration for me that, you know, that I was able to walk quite a good amount. Obviously, I'd still feel really tired if I went on a long walk, but I just couldn't seem to introduce any sort of resistance training. What I can see in hindsight was I had this baseline, and it was an imperfect baseline. Some days I would feel better than others. There has and still is a cyclical fluctuation in my energy levels. Always feel better after I've ovulated until I menstruate, so in the luteal phase. In many, many moons ago, I would feel very, very low in the earlier part of my cycle. And then that would start to pick up, you know, in the second week of my cycle. Now, currently, I would still say my exercise capacity is definitely better in the second half of my cycle, but it's still good in the first half of my cycle. And I don't get those big crashes like I used to. There are so many sort of ups and downs with my exercise capacity. And although I had a baseline, it was an imperfect baseline, as I'm sure you, the listener, are well aware. There are these ups and downs and highs and lows, and nothing is perfect or consistent, but you're just muddling through and you're just trying to do your best. So two things happened at once. I'll never be able to know how much one contributed versus the other one contributed, because things just happened how they happened. But I started my somatic experiencing course to train as a somatic experiencing practitioner. And that was, you know, completed it quite a while ago now, and it was absolutely amazing course. But I'll just say it was so much for my nervous system, more so than I realized at the time. And I had, bearing in mind, I had done brain retraining. I had some somatic tools that I was already using. I was doing yin yoga. I had like a whole nervous system toolbox. And on the very first day of the very first training block, which was 6 days, my entire nervous system just like crashed. And I spent the rest of the training little by little, like restabilizing and coming back up to baseline. So the reason why I share this has actually got nothing to do with exercise capacity necessarily, but it just goes to show that how you can think you're looking after your nervous system, and actually there's like a whole other layer of depth that is there to be explored. In the Nurturing Resilience membership, we talk about this concept, which is the energy wells, and how as your energy wells, as you move into bigger and bigger energy wells, you have more capacity. And so my energy well was like teeny, teeny, tiny, like the size of a teaspoon. And now obviously I have a big energy well. But at the time it was just so small, and that training just really sort of dysregulated me, because it was just so much work for my nervous system. Anyway, all of that aside, I started with the somatic experiencing training. I think that was in the November. And then in the January, I tested myself for mold and mycotoxins. And then when I tested myself for that, then I really started a committed detoxification approach. So then I was doing infrared sauna 3 times a week. I was taking binders. I was taking antimicrobial herbs. I was doing also things like showers, exfoliating with charcoal, soap, and oil pulling, like loads of things. I won't go into all the details in this episode, but I was like, right, let's get this stuff up my body. And so I was doing, when I started the somatic experiencing training, then I also started working with a one-on-one therapist, because we had to do a certain amount of our own personal hours. And I always say, like, I exceeded the hours, very, very early into the program. But for me, like having that nervous system support, I still see my therapist once a month. It's just been life changing. And I appreciate it such a privilege to be able to pay for that support. But for me, with the work that I do and holding so many other people and attuning to so many other dysregulated nervous systems, it's an absolutely essential part of my ongoing self-care toolbox. So I was working, doing one-on-one somatic therapy, and I was doing this mold detox. And I don't know why, at some point in time, I just felt like your body is ready now. Your body is ready to take on more. And it was nothing more or less than just like an internal sense of now, like, yes, now you can go, you can do this. And so this was when I started to reintegrate more resistance-based exercise back into my life. And it started initially with Qigong. I followed a platform called Movement for Modern Life. There's a wonderful teacher on there. I think her name is Mimi Kodima. I think she's also got some free videos on YouTube. And I just started off doing her videos, and some of them were Qigong, and then some of them were Qigong with a little bit of flow yoga. And so I did the easier Qigong ones, very, very basic, like 10, 15 minutes. And then I moved into some of the longer practices, which were Qigong-ish with some flow yoga. And even though it wasn't like resistance training, there's an element of that because you might maybe are doing a lunge here and there or a little squat here and there, or you're doing a chaturanga off your knees. So you're doing like a press-up style movement. And all of this, I felt like it was preparing my body for something more. But also when you're in that those types of practices, you are grounding, you are focusing on your breath. So I could really kind of manage my nervous system at the same time. And then I really, really, because I have a love for it, wanted to get back to resistance training. So I started super, 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 super small. Literally, I picked one exercise that I would do each day, and the structure would be one day I would do a leg exercise, one day I would do a push exercise, which I think was either like a dumbbell press, and I had teeny tiny little dumbbells, or a shoulder press, or I would do a rowing, a pull exercise. So I had a TRX, so I'd either do a TRX row or like a single arm dumbbell row because I had some teeny tiny dumbbells. And so I would do one exercise a day. So day one, I'd do one set of squats and just do five. Then the next day I would do my TRX rows and just do five. Then the next day I would do my chest press, and I think I had like 0.5 kilo dumbbells. They were tiny and pink. I think I've still got them in a drawer somewhere. And I would just do five. And then the next day, so on and so on. So the first thing to do was just do each day the exercise without having any malaise, or if I did get any malaise, that it was tolerable, like a little bit of brain fog or something that would clear after a bit of time. And after I did each exercise, I would lie down flat on the floor, regulate my heart rate, and I would do 4 or 6 breathing, or I just do some somatic awareness and sort of discharge any tension from the body. So I would do the exercise, and then I would do something to help my body know that it was safe. And then once I could do that comfortably, then I can't remember exactly how I did it, but there was a flavor of, okay, now I'm going to do 2 sets. So I might do 1 set of squats, lie down for 2 minutes, rest and regulate, and then do 1 set of rows, lie down, rest and regulate. And then the next day, another 2, the next day, another 2, and so on and so on. I'm sure I would have had some days off here and there as well. And then I built it up to 3 exercises. And then once I was doing like 3 exercises in a day, I think I would have done 1 day on, 1 day rest, 1 day on, 1 day rest. And then once I had like a leg, a push and a pull each day, alternating 1 day on, 1 day rest, then the next step was to build up the number of reps that I was doing. So when I was doing 5 reps before, now I would go to 6. And then as time went on, I'd go to 7. And as time went on, I'd go to 8, and then I'd go to 9, and then I'd go to 10. And once I went to 10, then I would drop the number of reps down again, and I would do 6 squats, have a break, six rows, have a break, six shoulder press, shall we say, have a break, and then another round of exactly the same. So it was like a little full body circuit. That meant I was doing 12 reps of each, but each exercise had at least 2 minutes rest in between. And then gradually I would just build this up. So then eventually I was doing 4 exercises, then I was doing 5, then I was doing 6 exercises. Then I was doing, you know, more reps of each exercise. Then I very gradually started to increase the resistance. So now I maybe do a squat and hold some weights, or I would change the size of my dumbbells. And so it was a very, very, what we call titrated process of doing a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And it took probably about 5 months. About 5 to 6 months for me to build up to a workout that was 20 or 30 minutes long. And usually at the end of the workout, I would do maybe 3 yin yoga poses just to down regulate and resettle my system. And I wrote everything down in a notebook so I could keep track of it all. When I used to train previously, you're always like going for the burn, going to failure. I never went for a burn. I never went to failure, because it's that sort of pushing to the edge which increases the inflammation and the tissue destruction. So what I would do would just do what felt comfortable, and I would do it enough so that it felt really easy, so that when I increased the weight further, the new weight would still feel really, really comfortable and I wasn't going for the burn. Now, several years later, I do train, I do go for the burn, I have capacity for that now. But in the beginning, the main goal was just to tell my body that it was safe to exercise, that it was okay for me to do this, that there would be no negative repercussions. And that meant doing less than what I could do, than what I really wanted to do. I was constantly holding the reins and pulling myself back, but I was just trying to say to my body, you can do this. This is easy. This is like nothing. This is not threatening to your system at all. And then gradually expanding capacity and expanding capacity. It sounds very simple when I explain all of this, but I'll tell you, it was not that simple. There was lots of trial and error involved. You know, there was some days when I did do too much, or there were some days when I did get a little bit more malaise. But what I would say is, for the most part, that it was manageable. Because I was doing the infrared sauna for my mold detox, for me personally, I found it was really helpful for the post-exertional malaise. Something about the heat, the sweating, the infrared light. If I had done perhaps a workout in the morning and then I did the sauna in the afternoon, it would actually help me to feel a little bit better. Possibly just sweating out some of the toxic load from the workout, I'm not sure. Other things that were helpful were also yin yoga. So if my body was feeling tired and sore, yin yoga was always a really great reset for me. And then cold plunges in the sea, obviously not for everyone. You do have to be careful of your adrenal glands. I've also overdone it, you know, cold plunging when I really wasn't feeling resilient enough and kind of tipping things over the edge. But for the most part, a cold plunge in the sea, some yin yoga and sauna were all really helpful recovery tools. I also used specific supplements, so glutathione. I forgot to mention that taking the glutathione was actually something that really helped me build up my walking capacity. I really felt like once I started taking glutathione that sort of stabilized me a little bit more on the walking front. But other things that clients have found useful and I've used myself have been creatine. D-ribose has also been helpful. And in some cases, antioxidants after workouts like curcumin was something that I used a lot of as well. So I had a toolbox to support my recovery, as well as trying to expand my capacity from an exercise perspective. But I didn't feel good all the time. There were some days I also felt pretty rubbish, but the rubbish feeling was manageable. Like I could feel like that and I could still work. I could feel like that, and it wouldn't necessarily interfere too much with activities of daily living. And I'm not telling anybody to push through and make themselves crash. But I think when you know your body, you kind of know like what symptoms you can get away with and which ones are more like warning signals. And for me, I was like, if I experience a little bit more malaise, I'd be like, this is okay. The next time I do the same workout, it might be better. And that was generally the case. Whenever I did something new, a new exercise or increased the weight, I'd be a bit more tired, a bit more brain foggy, a bit more sore after that. But then when I went and did the same exercise again, I wouldn't have the same response. And so it's just that it was like my body was getting used to it, and I was conditioning myself a little bit more to build up that exercise tolerance. So once I had built up that little home workout, I think there's even a reel on this on my Instagram of me doing the workout in like 10 times speed, then it was time for me to go back to the gym. And that was obviously a really exciting thing for me, more equipment, more choices, but also quite daunting as well. I hadn't been in a gym for maybe like 3 years. There was that sort of discomfort of like showing up and everybody is just the same, but you've been through this really huge thing and like my body had changed, you know, it just felt a little bit uncomfortable. But I quickly got over that and I would go, and initially I did kind of exactly the same workout I was doing at home, but just in the gym environment so that I could adjust to being in the new environment. And I would still be lying down on the floor and I would still be doing my breathing exercises and I would still be like regulating my nervous system and checking my heart rate in between sets to make sure that it had come down to a nice level before I went into the next set. And I guess from that point onward, it's mostly just been more of the same, just gradually building up slowly. As time has gone on, I don't lie on the floor and regulate my heart rate between sets anymore. I've built up my confidence that I can sustain a higher heart rate. When you're looking at resistance training, there's different variables that you can manipulate. So you can potentially adjust the weight that you're using. You can adjust the number of reps that you're doing. You can adjust the number of sets that you're doing, and you can adjust how long you rest between sets. So what I would do, kind of like rule of thumb, would be you never adjust more than one variable. If you're increasing the weight you're using, you keep the reps, the sets the same, the rest break the same, or less. That means that there's always something you can adjust. And so just little by little, adjusting one variable, increase the weight, then a few weeks later, keep the weight the same, but do more rest and do more reps. And then also around my cycle, because I know I'd have less energy in the beginning of my cycle and more energy in the second half of my cycle. Earlier in my cycle, then I would maybe take longer rest breaks. I maybe wouldn't do as many exercises. I'd maybe use a lighter weight. So there are ways that, you know, if you're having a good day or a bad day, you can reduce the pressure on your system in response to that. And that's something I still do to this day. I know when I get to the second half of my cycle, if I want a really good workout, like that's the time I can push. Whereas in other parts of my cycle, I may need to pull back and chill things out a bit more. So then the final thing, well, two things I want to mention. 2 years ago, after I had been training in the gym kind of under my own steam for about a year, what I was noticing was that I was getting a lot of chronic pain. And I think this is like a hangover from my illness when I couldn't resistance train, but I was doing so much yin yoga for my nervous system that certain things became very stretched and not very strong. And then when I started to resistance train again, there was dysfunctional biomechanics, and this was exacerbating a lot of pain in my neck and my shoulder. And I would often get headaches after training, or my neck would be really painful after training. And it was making me miserable because sometimes when you're in pain, you just feel more fatigued because the pain wears you down. And I remember the one day I went to the gym and I was working out and I could feel the pain, and I was like, this is not sustainable. You can't keep on doing this to yourself. And at which point in time I started working with Brendan Turner, who I've interviewed on the podcast as well. He does a training modality called Functional Patterns, which is designed to correct your biomechanics. And it was like a complete baptism of fire. It turned everything that I knew about training upside down, everything I thought I knew about my body and how to train my body upside down in the best possible way. And it was very slow and very gentle in the beginning. And I was even watching back recently some videos I took of myself in the early days. I was like, oh my gosh, look how clunky I am and look how badly I move. And now I'm sure I've still got loads of work still to do, but 2 years on, you know, I feel like I'm strong and I move well. And the best part is I'm completely pain-free. And I send so many people to Brendan. Actually, a lot of the one-on-one clients I'm working with who have some sort of physical biomechanical issue, I'm like, just go see Brendan. But I think it's something that it's really hard to understand unless you have experienced it yourself. And then a lot of people don't really grasp why I'm saying, like, go and do this thing. But it's something that I really believe in, and has helped me so much. And it's been a huge part of my movement journey as well. And why I think functional patterns can be so helpful for people with chronic fatigue when they're ready to resistance train again is because it starts really slow, gentle, and intentional. You're focusing on the quality of the movement, not the weight or the number of reps or sets that you're doing. And, but also because a lot of people who have chronic fatigue often have biomechanical issues, which are playing into their symptoms. And so if you can start to train your body in a way that corrects your biomechanics, which is also slow and gentle and actually reducing inflammation in your body, it's win-win. So if you want to find out more about that, then I will pop, Brendan's website in the show notes. So the functional patterns was a really big part of my journey progression. And then the other thing that has been more recent across the past couple of years is the reintroduction of sea swimming. So when I was ill, I would get in the sea. So I can't remember exactly like how things played out, but you know, I could do like a little bit of breaststroke or whatnot, but I wasn't actually doing, you know, front crawl or what I call proper swimming. And then last year, I really wanted to start building up my proper swimming just because I love being in the ocean. I swam. That was my sport when I was in high school. And, I'm a good swimmer and I have a love of swimming. And it was this cardiovascular component that I really wanted to get back into. I think prior to that, I was doing some incline walking on a treadmill just to do some steady state exercise, getting my heart rate higher. And then as the weather got better and the water got warmer, then I transitioned into doing some swimming. And the great thing about doing open water swimming is I don't use a wetsuit. So you are limited by the temperature, which really helps with the pacing, because in the beginning you can only stay in for 10 minutes. And then as the water gets a bit warmer, you stay in for 12 minutes. And then as the water gets a bit warmer, you stay in for 14 minutes and so on and so on. So I could gradually build up my swimming capacity as the temperature changed. But I think I only ever got as far as like a 20 minute swim. And a 20 minute swim at that point in time was still a lot for my body. But then last year I went on holiday to South Africa, to see my family. And, there's, the university that my sister works for and which was the university that I went to when I was a student, has a really nice outdoor swimming pool. So I joined the swimming pool for the holiday, and I used to train in that pool when I was in high school. So it was very familiar, very nostalgic in a nice way. And I knew when I was 18 years old, I could do 3 kilometers in the pool. So gradually over the course of the holiday, I started out doing 1K and then 2K. And then eventually I did a couple of 3Ks across the holiday. And I was still tired afterwards. I definitely felt like I needed more rest after doing those 3Ks, but no malaise. And one of my bucket list things that I really wanted to do was a swim trek holiday. So Swim Trek is a company and they organize swimming holidays and destinations all over the world. You know, there's Europe, there's Mexico, there's Asia, there's Fiji, the Middle East, like they have hundreds of destinations. And I really wanted to go on the swimming holiday. And they had a 3K, a 5K, and a 7K. And I thought, that means you do 3K a day, 5K a day, or 7K a day. And I thought, well, if I know I can at least do 3K, then I can go on a swim trek holiday. So in February this year, I booked the holiday, and I actually still felt very apprehensive about the distance because I knew I could do 3 kilometers, but I was like, I don't know how my recovery is going to be doing 3 kilometers and then the next day doing 3 and then the next day doing 3 and so on and so on. But it was something I was up for training for. Unfortunately, we had a really, really beautiful summer here in the UK and the water warmed up quite quickly. I was able to do some 2K swims before I went on the holiday, and then I managed the 3K each day really, really easily on holiday, which felt like such a great achievement. And then since I've come back from that holiday, I've done some longer swims just locally through some of the people that I swim with. I did, and sort of my big celebration is that I managed to do a 4K swim at the beginning of August, which took about an hour and 28 minutes. So that's been my longest endurance event, shall we call it, apart from hiking, since I experienced chronic fatigue. So that has been a really, really big achievement. So that's pretty much everything that I wanted to share. And I think what I really wanted you to take away from this, apart from those three things that I mentioned, the staying within capacity, managing inflammation in the body, and working with the nervous system and the coupling dynamics, is that it takes time. I always wanted to do everything faster than my body was ready. And that was where I would trip over my own feet and be responsible for the cause of many crashes and miserable moments. But as my nervous system is developing more and I've been on this journey longer, I'm learning more patience. And it's just little by little, chipping away. You know, sometimes you're not going to notice the progress in weeks or even in a month, but maybe you notice the progress in several months or 6 months or years. And now from where I sit here recording this, looking back at everything I've achieved, I'm like, wow, you've really come so far. But in each moment, I always wanted more than being exactly where I was. And if you can just, and it's such a cliche, but if you can just enjoy where you are and really appreciate the capacity that your body has right now, however big or however small, and just take those baby steps little by little, things will shift over time. You know, things don't shift if you just wait for things to happen. You have to be intentional. You want to work on some of these components that I've mentioned. But little by little, things can and do shift. So I hope you have enjoyed me sharing this with you today. Maybe there's been some inspiration that has come from this and how you structure your exercise. And I will see you in the next episode.